During the Lenten season, we've been looking at various freedoms which ought to be ours as Christians. We've looked at freedom from indignity, freedom from slavery, freedom from penury, freedom from conformity. And today, we come to this idea of freedom from partiality, or to put it straightforwardly, you should have no favourites. The letter to James is, in fact, the most straightforward of all the books of the Bible. Indeed, it's so straightforward that more often than not, we find ourselves recoiling from it. It's blunt to the point of bluntness. But for James, that's what it was meant to be, because practical questions demand practical answers. To live the Christian life is to put into practice what one believes. So the most famous phrase that there is within the letter of James is this: faith without works is dead. Faith without works is dead. Now, him writing that caused a lot of difficulty for many other Christians, most especially Luther. Martin Luther wanted to throw the letter of James out of the Bible altogether, because he felt it was a contradiction to what the Apostle Paul had taught. But actually, James doesn't contradict Paul. James doesn't say that a person is saved on account of the works they do. No, for James, as for Paul, it is by grace we are saved through faith, and that not of ourselves. But for James, if faith doesn't reveal itself in practical terms, what's the point of having faith? What's the point of believing if what you believe doesn't show itself in the way you live? Jesus himself said, if you have a light, well, use it to illuminate the whole house. Don't, as we say, hide your light under a bushel. It's a simple, straightforward message. So it should be with us. Let people see our good deeds, the works we do, that they might give glory to the God in whom we believe, the God in whom we trust, the God in whom we have put our faith. The works we do, consequent on the faith we have, itself consequent upon the grace we have received, are necessary that others might come to realize what it means to live a Christian life. Faith without works is dead. Faith comes alive in the works that we do. But it's more than that. Faith has to impact itself in practical terms upon every aspect of life. Every aspect of life has to be transformed in the light of the faith we have. And so in this particular passage, where James is talking about having no favorites, he counsels against falling into the trap of imposing secular divisions upon the Christian community, rather than realizing that the Christian community exists in order to confront a divided society, so characteristic of a secular world. So again, back to Paul. Paul declares there is no Jew nor Greek, no male nor female, no slave nor free. And here James declares, in effect, an addendum to that, no rich nor poor. But of course, in reality, early church congregations did comprise converts from both Jewish and Greek backgrounds. There were men and women, there were slaves, and there were those who were free people. And there were those who were rich, and there were those who were poor. James is saying the Christian has to see past that which divides us in order to recognize that which unites us. So James is saying to them and to us, it's not a question of rich Christians and poor Christians, and give the rich Christian the better seat and the poor Christian can sit in the back. No, what he says is, we're all Christians. Some of us just happen to be rich, and some of us just happen to be poor. But we're all Christians. The size of your bank balance doesn't determine the nature of your relationship with God, either whether you have a lot or a little. Don't glory in riches, don't glory in poverty, glory in the faith you have and work it out according to the means that are available to you. If we can manage to see each other that way, we will not fall into the trap of giving greater prominence to the rich Christian while paying less attention to the poor Christian. Moreover, we don't fall into the bigger trap of assuming, as the world might and often does, that the richer the person is, the better they are, the more deserving they are of respect, the more attention they deserve. Because, as James says, in effect, a person's wealth can be acquired in any number of ways, not all of which are honorable. I don't know if any of you went to Cheltenham last week and whether you had a good week or not, and whether you came home with more money than you set out with. I don't mind. Just put a fair chunk of it in the collection and it'll be okay. Does the fact you go to Cheltenham make you more or less honourable in God's sight? I don't know. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, get a life. Faith in Jesus Christ demands that we be liberated from any sense of partiality. Demands that we realize there is no room for partiality of any kind within the church. Demands we appreciate there can be no partiality as far as the way we judge each other. The only way the church will grow at any level is by having the courage to engage directly with those who need to hear its message. The message that faith without works is dead. By working as hard as it can to communicate that same message in word and deed, practicing what we preach. We pontificate from pulpit, we need to put it into action. We need to put our money where our mouth is. Yes, so if we're saying help the poor, then the money we receive into the church should be channeled in order that poor people can be helped. We shouldn't just bemoan the state we are in. All too easy to wring our hands over the state of the world. No, we should be doing all that we can to effect regime change as far as that state is concerned. We should not be content with merely pointing out what people are doing wrong, but rather doing all we can to engender a spirit of hope whereby people are encouraged to do justice and love kindness and walk humbly with their God. And for all of this, we are called, individual Christians, we are called to be a role model, a mentor, and a guide. We are the only Jesus that some will ever see. Thus, we cannot afford in any way to allow bias or prejudice to get in the way. We have to see beyond a person's color. We have to see beyond a person's age. We have to see beyond a person's gender. We have to see beyond a person's sexuality. We have to see beyond a person's class, a person's language, a person's pedigree, a person's ethnicity, even a person's faith or lack of it. We've got to see beyond all of these things because they are barriers to our effective communication with other people. See beyond all of this to see the real person, who they really are. Before God, no one is more privileged than any other. None of us is more privileged than any other in the sight of God. Because before God, we are all privileged. None of us is more privileged because before God, we are all privileged. Not for nothing is the most powerful illustration in the whole of the New Testament that when Jesus takes a little child and places that little child in the midst of them and says, as such is the kingdom of heaven. That's why we do what we do within the context of an act of public worship. We baptize a child in front of us all. We take a little child and we put today him in the midst of us and say, such is the kingdom of heaven. Julius will grow up and develop for himself various characteristics. Today we see him as he is, and how we trust he will be seen by God throughout his whole life, and how we will see him as that life unfolds. There are no favorites within the church, because we're all God's favorites.